This is Robbie Dillmore from the Christian Car Guy and Kingdom Pursuit, where we hear how God takes your passion and uses it to build a kingdom. Your chosen Truth Network podcast is starting in just a few seconds. Enjoy it and share it. But most of all, thank you for listening and for choosing the Truth Podcast Network.
This is the Truth Network.
Previously on Lantern Rescue.
I remember every night for years before bed, I would think, like, if I could send a message out to the victims of human trafficking, what would I want them to know? And it was always the same message. It was always, hold on, I'm on my way, and I'll be there as soon as I can. And then, you know, me and Mark came together in the way that we did, and we founded Lantern, and we started the team. And now that has changed from I'm on my way to we're on our way, and we'll be there as soon as we can.
Welcome to Lantern Rescue, a ministry program dedicated to bringing light into the darkness of human trafficking. It's time to light the way to freedom. This is Lantern Rescue. We tell the stories, we talk about rescues, and we empower you to do something about it. William Wilberforce once said, "Let it not be said I was silent when they needed me." This is Lantern Rescue.
So I'm so excited myself to always hear what goes on with Lantern Rescue. And this week we have a new member of the team that we're going to get a chance to be introduced to and hear his heart. And these stories are just almost mind-blowing how God calls these people into this ministry. Today we are blessed to have John with us. So John, share a little bit of, you know, how you find yourself in this place.
Hey, sir. Pleasure to be on the show. Thank you for having me. So probably about 15 years ago, you know, I had this idea and really a passion for trafficking, counter trafficking. And it basically started when counting my blessings, and amongst them, I found freedom to be probably the single blessing that I valued the most. And realizing that there are people who don't have freedom, not just physical freedom, but kind of mental, emotional, physical freedom, and wanting to be able to contribute to that. But I didn't have the background that I needed at the time to do what I thought would be necessary to bring freedom, ultimately, to people who were enslaved. So I set out to join the federal government and get some experience, make some connections, et cetera, and ultimately applied for a job as a diplomat with the United States Department of State, and then also simultaneously joined the Army. And I went through a program in the Army as well. And then after about 10 years, figured I had enough experience, enough connections, and it was time to start my own organization. And ultimately, I wanted to kind of tackle the problem set from a different angle. So right now, there's a lot of awareness campaigns, as you're probably familiar with. There's also rescue organizations, obviously. But one piece that is not as often addressed is the actual traffickers themselves. So it worked out that I met Mark, and we sort of started approaching this problem set together, looking at, okay, who can do the rescues and then who can do the counter trafficking piece and how can we tackle this problem set together? Ultimately, what we'd like to do is bring freedom, not because we can provide anything more than just physical freedom, but ultimately we want to be a pointer to the freedom that Jesus gives us in eternity. And we'd like to reach not only just the rescued slaves, but we'd also like to reach traffickers in prison. So we hope that once we wrap up traffickers, they're in prison, they're no longer able to traffic, they would have a change of heart, they would hear the gospel, and that they would return to their former neighborhood and their former lives and preach a new gospel and say, I once was lost, but you know, now I'm found, and that they would contribute to counter trafficking as well.
So is there one particular story in that work that you were doing with the Army or in the diplomatic corps or however that worked that said, oh yeah, this is where I really feel like God is calling me?
So it actually started before that. My interest in the topic began prior, and I thought the best way to sort of get eyes on the problem set and see how different governments work, because ultimately we're working by, with, and through governments. And we're helping them to tackle a problem. So we're not doing it ourselves. We can't do it ourselves. We need the local indigenous population to to really be tackling the problem. So there weren't necessarily particular things that happened within my careers, but I was fortunate to have a good career in both the Army and the Department of State, and met a lot of really good people that are trying to tackle the problem in those areas as well.
Wow. So since you've gotten together with Mark, has there been a particular story that really said, okay, this is the organization that I really want to, you know, kind of hook myself to?
Yeah. So when Mark and I met, it was an immediate connection. We both had a lot of similar background experiences, values, and, you know, he wanted to start Lantern, and then I wanted to start my organization, which I haven't mentioned the name yet. So the name of my organization is Pride of Aslan. Hat tip to C.S. Lewis there.
Right, sure.
Yeah, so we met, and it was clear that we would probably do something together in the long term. We met in a different capacity with a different organization. We both were contributing to that organization, but kind of seeing that there was probably more similar passions and interests if we worked together.
So, Mark, can you give me kind of your side of that story?
Sure. You know, if our listeners heard the last show, I commented on how when we try to go through a door and it's God's calling, he just opens that door. You know, and with the open door means everything that you're going to need, resources, individuals, people, you know. And in this business, I guess you want to call it, or this ministry, it is critical that you have the right people, you know, in the right places. And John, just originally, first and foremost, like he said, we had, you know, similar values and passion. And, you know, we've done operations together, and his organization, kind of, we call it POA, has been critical in training. It's been involved in operations, you know, raids and rescues. And his experience, just like the other team members, is extensive. And man, it's, you know, I can't ever take credit for anybody, I think, that's put together on this joint task effort. It's just a God thing. And John has been definitely that. And I respect him so much, his heart and his love for God, and then his willingness to serve in this capacity.
So, you know, I know that what you do is certainly confidential to a great extent, but I'm wondering if there was an actual story where you guys were working on something and you were like, oh man, I mean, this is really an effective way to go about doing this.
I often get to sit back and look at the people that God has surrounded me with and watch them work in different environments and different things. And there was honestly a couple of times with John. One in particular was, we were in a new environment, new country, new relationships, and making trying to build a critical relationship in a particular country in order to be able to, you know, work and operate. And I remember sitting at that table and listening to him build rapport and generally care about the individual, ask the right questions, not expose anything that he shouldn't about himself or us or anything, you know, that would come back around on us later. And he just did a fantastic job. And I remember sitting there and listening to that, and I was like, this is great. This is somebody who's calm, cool, and collected, and can handle himself clearly. And that goes back to that background where, you know, obviously to be a diplomat and the training that he's had, why he did such a good job then. Then second introduction to John overseas was, we were in a country where we're going to have to do raids literally 2 days from point of entry. And that is, we're going into hostile environments to rescue some victims, looking at a foreign unit who had zero to little training. And John stepped up and said, okay, we have to, you know, do some training. Obviously we knew that, the preparation of it, but because of the whole setup, it kind of came at us quicker than we'd ever would always like. But John was able to roll with the punches and do a fantastic job. He's been a instructor in the military for much of his life. And he just did a fantastic job with those guys. You know, when I watch my team or my friends and all of us in those environments, you know, we're hot. I mean, most of the places we work, unfortunately, they're not 70 degrees in San Diego. They are 110 degrees. It is hot. It is, there's not a restroom in sight. There's not a building with air conditioning. You're hoping you can buy water somewhere, and it's difficult. And so, especially if you're kitted up doing those trainings, it's a service. And somebody with the skill set, I'm going to end with this and give it back to them. Somebody with the skill set of John or Alan or TC, Ren, all these folks, they can go and do this, the training part of it, and they will make tremendous amount of money. Okay. And any contractors out there listening and guys in the military, you can make good money going overseas, but they do this for free. The heart of, hey, we want to help this country. We want to help this law enforcement team. We want to see perpetrators put away, and we want to see kids rescued. And so I'm in admiration of that with others, including John.
So, John, your side of that story. So you're there, you're with Mark. What did you observe?
So there were probably a couple different operations. We landed, and it happened very quickly, probably quicker than any of us expected. So we didn't know what to expect either, where we were going and what we were going to see when we got there. Ultimately, it was great to have the team together that was there, because it just happened to work so well that everybody's skill sets and backgrounds complemented each other. And I would say probably the two most impactful rescues that we were on, one was in a country far, far away, and like Mark mentioned, awfully hot. And we were out in a pretty distant location, and there were countless children, probably over 20. And we couldn't take all of them. Ultimately, we didn't have accountability of all of them either. We didn't know. We knew there was a certain subset for sure that were slaves, and so those were the ones that we were able to get accountability of. But
what kind of slaves were they, John? Were they like
child slaves?
Like making bricks, or what were they enslaved to do?
So the boys and the girls were both making bricks, but probably the worst of those were the girls, whose toes and fingers were painted, not because they needed that to make bricks, but because of what their slave owners would have them do at night after they were done for the day. So having an opportunity to meet those kids and offer them a way out was, it was an honor to be there, honor to meet those kids. And I know it was difficult for all of the team members, but certainly the focus isn't on the team members, it's on those kids. And so that was probably the first time and experience where I got to see Mark work. He's clear, level-headed, thinks quickly on his feet, and just loves these kids. And I think that was, it's one thing when you get wrapped up in an operation, you're thinking about the operations details, and you're not focusing on much else. And when there's that moment where you pause and you look over and you see somebody holding a kid's hand and running with them and playing with them once they're, these kids are scared, once they're being rescued and they're in a vehicle and we're trying to get them to a safe location. I think for me, that was probably the most impactful, seeing not only was Mark good in an operational sense, but he actually cares. He actually loves these kids. And that was sufficiently impactful for me that I knew that we needed to move forward.
Wow, absolutely. Well, that'll give you a sense of John. And so when we come back, we're going to hear a little bit more of what's transpired since they became more associated, when we come back with much more on Lantern Rescue. Lantern Rescue is a USA-based organization that conducts international rescue operations for people suffering from human trafficking. Lantern specializes in sending former U.S. Special Operations law enforcement and intelligence personnel to partner with host nations and assist them in creating specialized units to combat ongoing security problems, such as genocide, terrorism, and human trafficking. As a nonprofit charity, they offer services free of charge to their host nations.
human trafficking has grown into the second largest criminal activity in the world, reaching an estimated $150 billion in annual activity. Lantern Rescue has developed rapidly to combat trafficking. Lantern operates through a trained international network in order to rescue women and children from sex and labor slavery, and facilitates holistic aftercare services. They're gearing up for operations right now, and you can go to lanternrescue.org to see how you can support them financially. Welcome back to Lantern Rescue. Today's episode, we're getting introduced to a new team member and how God, it's amazing how he provides, Mark, how, you know, specialized people with specialized training again for such a time as this.
Yeah, you're right. John is like all of us, but he is really highly trained at team movements. And you made me remember in that comment, you made me remember a time we were on a rescue operation. We're in a very, very large facility, and we're having to move toward the back. And the back of the building had a motel in it. And one of the things I want to praise him for is in that moment, there was a word in that country that means gun, and there's a word in that country that means friend. And they sound very, very similar. And in very loud environments, you cannot hear, you know, very well at all. And I totally missed over the comm what was called out, and thinking instead that we needed to push forward. And what had occurred is an individual was hiding, and he was armed and literally had a gun view of us from a short rooftop. I mean, he honestly, the Lord's protection, he could have just shot the first two team members easily. But at that moment in confusion, I remember looking back without comms and being able to place my eyes on John, who at that time you were running the Bravo team, I think. I look back at John, and he makes the comments to pull that team together in their environment, to link up, to firm our team movement together so that we can finish the operation, so we can finish rescuing a girl. And that was a night of, I think we rescued a total of 13 girls. And, you know, it was just one operation after another through many hours of the night. And I still remember realizing that, man, in times of heat and times of when you can't understand and times when your life's threatened, he's kind of the guy I would often look back at and go, okay, lay eyes on me and let's do some hand signals and make sure we're working through this building in the right way. I don't know, John, you remember that? You remember that evening?
I do. So as you can imagine, when you're entering a building or a facility, you can get spread out pretty quickly. And as soon as somebody identifies that you're in a vulnerable position and somebody has a weapon and it's potentially trained on you, you're not sure, chaos can ensue pretty quick. So key thing there is trying to keep everybody calm and stay organized and keep the team together. And we ended up getting stretched a little thin as we're trying to lock down the entire location, ultimately find the kids that we were looking for, one in particular, and then stay safe. The guy with the gun fortunately fled. We were ultimately safe, and we left the facility with the girl, and we were able to, fortunately, by the grace of God, offer her a new life. But it did get a little hairy there for a minute, and I was grateful to have Mark and some other teammates who are really solid there as well.
Wow. I mean, you know, for those of us who've never been in anything like that, it's like, oh my goodness. So Mark, what happened next?
You know, what happened next is when we finish out that particular night, we were probably wrapping things up around 3 a.m., in which case we now have in our possession about 13 victims. And, you know, we're administering care to them. We're administering medical, you know, care to them right there in transit back to the station. You know, we'll just call it the station. So it's a law enforcement station in that country. And we go back to that place. And then, you know, what is always fascinating is that the rescue doesn't stop there. There's fear in some of the hearts of the girls, because they're not, they're so afraid of what is occurred and what's happening now to them. You know, there's so much that has to transition in the next couple of days. But what you get to see some, you know, in the next couple of days is a smiling face at times. And that particular rescue operation, I have to say, I will never forget the girl. You remember the two girls and the one boy. You remember that, John? The two and the one. They were still together, those three. We had not placed them yet in aftercare or, you know, began the reunification process. And so we got to spend a little extra time with them. And talk about a 13-year-old girl who was, like, smiling from ear to ear. Man, I mean, she just had joy, like joy has never looked before. I think I could have spent days with that kid. Just, you know, she could have just came right to my family. I would have loved it. And so I know I came around and saw John just spending time with them as well. And we don't always get to do that right immediately. And we got to do that. And I just remember his heart as well as the hearts of some of the other teammates, but watching him interface with those victims. I remember you standing there, buddy, and I remember you, you know, seeing the love in your heart for them, and I appreciated that. So that's why we partner with somebody like John, and that's why he's kind of a joint task effort with Lantern, because he has his own organization. I want him to talk about that. It's in his birth stages, but I want him to share a little bit about, you know, a little more about POA. But I just want to say this is why we partner with him in a joint task effort.
Wow. John?
Hey, sir. So we are in the early stages of the organization here. So we're, you know, we're recruiting and we're fundraising. We're doing all the things that you need to do for a nonprofit. And we're establishing partnerships. You know, I have a feeling probably Lantern's going to be our strongest partner and maybe only partner if we end up growing kind of at the same rate. But, you know, Lantern's focused on rescues, and that works perfectly because we're focused on the traffickers themselves. So we want to remove them from being able to continue enslaving children. So it's hand in glove. You know, we ultimately remove the traffickers, and Lantern is there to take the rescues. And like Mark mentioned, you know, we're not fortunate enough to be able to spend a lot of time with the rescues because we want to get them to aftercare as soon as possible. But that last operation was a joy. Anyway, back to Pride of Aslan. So we are looking for pretty much every position is we're trying to fill, you know, administrative, financial, you know, legal team. We need a legal team. We are looking for some operations folks as well and fundraising staff. Obviously, a lot of this is volunteer work, but hopefully at some point we'll have enough means to be able to provide for salaries. And so we're in the early stages. We're hoping to grow right now, you know, three operators, sort of the first 3 years. We're going to go kind of focus in one country. We're doing the surveys right now. After 3 years, then hopefully we can double in size. We'll move to a second country and sort of repeat that model. So it should be a sustainable growth model, but we're also trying to work ourselves out of a job so we can get local buy-in, train them up enough that we don't need to be there anymore. Maybe we can support them financially if they need it, or, you know, occasional training, but ultimately we want to work ourselves out of a position. Pride of Aslan, or POA, we ultimately are working to disable traffickers and free enslaved children in places without hope. So the State Department sort of looks at human trafficking in like a three-tier system. So, you know, first tier is countries that are willing and able to tackle the problem. Second tier is countries that are potentially willing, but maybe not able. And the third tier is unwilling or unable. And so we're working in the second and third tier countries. And we're working through the local trusted sources, whatever that might be. I mean, in some cases, that's going to be law enforcement. In other cases, that might be tribal leaders. And they're going to be trusted sources. You know, we work through a vetting system, intelligence collection with them. And then we try to further indigenous ownership of the mission for them, their own investment in their own community, and then ultimately an establishment of a self-sustaining system. So we have an email address. And we'd love to hear from anybody who would love to contribute to the mission here. If they have a passion for counter-trafficking and have a skill set and background in that type of work, it is prideofaslan@protonmail.com. PRIDEOSALAN at ProtonMail. ProtonMail.com.
Thank you. Thank you so much, John. And also, clearly, we now have somebody else we can pray for. Not only John himself, but obviously the organization, the Pride of Aslan. And is there a website as well, or just the email address?
Just the email address. We are, you know, we're probably going to stay off the web.
I understand completely.
Given kind of the nature of the work and what we're going to do. We do have a fundraising link, but, you know, that's provided through the email address. We've also chosen an email post that is encrypted email. So if anybody is not sure how much they can discuss, they can feel comfortable emailing at that address.
Wonderful, wonderful. Give it one more time.
It is prideofaslan at protonmail.com.
Protonmail.com. So, Mark, what an awesome thing God has provided for you. Have you got some additional thoughts for the listeners here in the last few seconds?
As we say every week, you know, we're so thankful for the opportunity to share on radio with Truth Network and then our other partners. We're so thankful for our listeners, just the prayer and support. I mean, it's so encouraging when we get an email of someone who says, you know, I'm praying for you guys every day. And, you know, we need it because we have to have God's blessing in the way. He has to light the way for us so we can light the way to freedom for others, you know?
That is so beautiful. Thank you so much, Mark, and thank you, John.
Hey, Robbie, really appreciate the opportunity to be on the show, and I bless your effort as well.
We'll look forward to our next time. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Robbie.
This is the Truth Network.